From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2018, which was dubbed Year of the Teacher. That's according to reporter Madeline Will, writing for Education Week. According to her research, tens of thousands of teachers in six states walked out of their classrooms to protest cuts to school funding and low salaries. And nearly 180 teachers ran for their state legislatures on education-focused platforms. Around the country, teachers were standing up to fight for and protect the future of their profession. Despite all of that, 90% of U.S. teachers who participated in a recent survey said they are satisfied with their jobs. They said they value the profession, even if the rest of society does not. That is harsh. And now with the 2018-2019 school year in the books, we want to know what teachers who just wrapped up their first year in the classroom think about the state of the profession. What did they expect during year one? Or what do new candidates expect that they're going to encounter in the profession? Are there challenges or bright spots that might surprise teachers? And what do they think about the future of teaching as a profession? Let's welcome our guests for the hour. Stephen Cohen is back with us, director of the Career and Teaching Program at the Rochester City School District. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be back.
Susan Spencer is an algebra and geometry teacher at Rochester Prep High School. Just finished year one. Yeah?
Yep. Thanks for having me, Evan.
How was it?
It was amazing.
Well,
loved it.
We got a lot to talk about there. Carrie McCree is an English language arts teacher at Anna Murray Douglas School No. 12 in the Rochester City School District, who is a 2019 Rochester Career and Teaching Program Intern of the Year. Welcome to you. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
I'm going to read a few things for our audience, for listeners to think about that kind of puts things in perspective. Back in 1975, 22% of college students in this country were majoring in education. So between a fifth and a quarter, 22% were going into teaching. 40 years later, fewer than 10% of Americans who are pursuing higher ed want to go into teaching. That is a big, big drop. And the shift from an education major is especially notable among women. Over the last 40 years, the share of female college students majoring in education has gone from 32% to 11%. Now, polling, what do Americans think about teachers? Well, just one in four Americans today believes teachers are paid fairly. Nearly two-thirds approve of the national teachers' unions, and three-quarters agree teachers have the right to strike. And that last figure, by the way, the right to strike, two-thirds of Republicans say, sure, yes, right to strike. Three-quarters of independents, 90% of Democrats. So we look at what happened in 2018, as we read in the intro, a lot of support for those kinds of ideas. So, Stephen, you work with future teachers all the time. Are you seeing these trends from 1975 to today show up in terms of fewer candidates, more concern about pay? What are you seeing?
Well, it all depends on, in our district, in the Rochester City School District, we have a lot of needs that might not be typical nationally, but it depends on the tenure area. So right now, if you're a special education teacher, you're not going to have a hard time getting into our district. If there are some other subject areas where you might have more difficulty, the kinds of people that are signing up are still passionate, they're still energetic, they still are really possessed by what you want our teachers to be possessed by, which is a love of kids and an interest in what on what they're teaching, and a hope to really inspire the next generation of students. But overall, recruitment, and it would be better to speak to our human resources department for more specifics about this. I know it's been a struggle recruiting in some areas, in some subject areas, in some demographic areas that didn't used to be a struggle.
So take the poll for me now, okay? One in four Americans say teachers are paid fairly. What group are you in? Are teachers paid fairly?
In Rochester, it's we are paid well. We are not paid commensurate with other professionals with our level of education. So fairly is a bit, in the eye of the beholder. We're doing okay, thanks to a very vibrant professional association, our Rochester Teacher Association, and our New York State United Teachers, which advocates on behalf of New York public school teachers. We are doing well. We have insurance benefits that are decent. Is it fair when compared to other industries, other professionals with similar credentials? It's another program, perhaps, for me.
But. Listen, Senator, the panel directs you to answer the question. That's a very artful dodge.
But thank you very much. I've been working on it.
All right. That's fair enough. I do take the point. And I do think it's probably fair to guess that you think teachers ought to be paid more. Fairly is a hard word to answer yes or no. But should teachers be paid more?
It is an incredibly hard job to do well. And those that do it well really should be compensated well for the effort that they put in. And for what they have to endure in order to do their work well.
All right. I yield my time. The senator will not answer the question.
I'm ready.
Now, NPR covered what happened in 2018 extensively. Teacher strikes, more teachers running for office. And, Stephan, I suspect that didn't surprise you, at least. I mean, I thought that was fascinating to see a lot more public engagement there.
I was encouraged by it. I really was. One of the risks sometimes if you are doing well is complacency around some of these issues. And slowly but surely, and sometimes not so slowly, some of the respect for the profession, some of the professional discretion that teachers need to be able to exercise has been eroded over the years. And pay has stagnated with cost of living. And in many regions of the country, especially those without a history of strong teacher unionism, things have stagnated. It was encouraging to me to see that fire lit, and I think it inspired all of us.
All right, let's talk to the teachers we have in studio about their experience over the last 12 months and now what they expect going forward. And as we go throughout the program, listeners, if you want to join the conversation about whether you would encourage your children or you think about teaching yourself today, you can call the program or you can email us, connections@wxxi.org. Now, Carrie, you're going to be at Anna Murray Douglas School number 12 next year as well, right?
Yes.
And for maybe for a long time?
Possibly.
Do you hope so?
Yes.
Give me a sense for what life was like for you 12 months ago and how things have changed. Take me through your year.
All right. So 12 months ago, I had already received the offer from RCSD, and I wasn't exactly sure what school I would be in. So I was just sort of waiting to get the news in terms of what school I'd be placed in and what grade level I'd be teaching. So I found out a couple weeks before school that I'd be teaching 7th grade at Anna Marie Douglas number 12.
7th grade's hard.
It has
I mean,
its
all
challenges.
Grades are hard, but man, I remember boys especially, it's hard. You are someone who went to School Without Walls?
I graduated from School Without Walls. I'm an RCSD graduate, proud graduate of the city school district, and that's part of what inspired me to become a teacher.
Well, I was going to ask you that. I mean, when's the first time you thought to yourself, yeah, I could do this, I could be a teacher? Was it early on? Was it, high school? What did you think?
Very early on. Both of my parents were teachers with RCSD, and so I grew up visiting them at their respective schools. And so education, in particular with Rochester City School District, has always been a part of my life.
So here you are now, and we'll get into, as we go throughout the hour, some of the concerns or some of the reasons that we have in terms of surveys and statistics about why fewer people are becoming teachers. But going to the fall, you probably learned a lot last fall.
Absolutely.
Eyes wide open. What was the biggest surprise about teaching?
The biggest surprise was just the level of energy that kids have in the classroom. It is endless. And so keeping up with them, I had to make sure I was prepared every day. So I spent quite a few weekends in the very beginning of the year just making sure that my lessons were prepped and modified, differentiated for the students to ensure that they were learning the material that I was required to teach. And so just keeping up with their energy really was challenging in the beginning. But after that, I was able to really connect and build relationships with the students.
Do you look at year two thinking, okay, I've built the foundation, and so much of what I didn't know, I've got a better sense for it. It's going to be not less work. Teaching is always work. But in terms of that foundation building, you've got more to work with going into year two?
I feel confident, mm-hmm. a lot more confident than I did about a year ago in the fall, because I've gone through this one time so far. And so I do have, you know, the content that I need to be able to teach. And now I can just modify it to make it even better, you know, for the next school year.
Give me, without naming names here, give me your best moment. What stands out?
My best moment probably was when I was working with a student that I noticed her behavior started to change a little bit in the classroom and take a turn for the worst. And so I pulled her aside, I talked to her, and I really found out what was going on. And I was so surprised how much she was willing and able to open up, you know, with me about some of the struggles that she was facing at home, which made me really, you know, think about these kids are full people and they have a lot of obstacles that they may be, you know, challenges that they may be facing at home. And they do bring that to school with them some days. So every day for a kid is not always a good day. And, you know, when we have 28 kids in a classroom, we have to be very much so in tune with what's going on with all of their personalities and some of the challenges that they may be facing on a daily basis.
What happened with her?
She just revealed that she was having some mental health concerns, and I had no clue that this was something that she was struggling with. And so it made me become a lot more sensitive to maybe her needs and figuring out ways to give her time if she needed a break from the content or just to take a walk or get a drink of water. And so that was an important revelation that I made by making that connection with her.
What did you see the impact from that moment, from that day through the rest of the year? Did things get different? Were things
so
different
much
with her?
Better. Yeah. So much better. I mean, she asked if we could meet and talk again. And I really felt like I was able to make an authentic connection with her. And I noticed that she put more effort into her work because there was an understanding that we developed between, you know, each other.
And now I got to ask, did you have hard, again, you don't have to name names or anything like that, but did you have hard moments that made you feel afraid or questioning your work?
No, I think every day is a challenge. And so knowing that I'm walking in the door and there will be some obstacles that I'm facing, for me, it's just a matter of taking a step back and figuring out how to address that challenge or overcome that obstacle. And anything, you know, that's worth having is, you know, going to have some sort of challenge. So in this career, I think that it's an expectation, but every day is a fresh day and a new start.
It's a wide range of parents out there in terms of their involvement, how engaged they are, how helpful they are, how courteous and respectful they may be of their children's teacher. Generally speaking, what message would you send to parents?
Stay involved as much as you possibly can. And just know that, you know, the kids are sometimes dealing with things in school that the parents may not even be aware of. Sometimes they go home and they are playing video games and not really communicating as much with their parents. And so we may see things that are going on and we may phone calls, just pick up the phone, you know, email, make sure that you're accessible to all of your, you know, children's teachers.
Your seventh graders, how many have their own mobile phones?
Almost all of them.
Yeah. What do you do about that?
So at our school, the cell phones are collected in the morning when the kids check in, and they're held by the assistant principal throughout the day, and they're able to retrieve them at dismissal each day.
How do they play Fortnite if they don't have their phones in class?
Well, we don't, you know, there's not a lot of downtime in class. I try to keep the kids as engaged as possible. So, Fortnite.
Are you concerned that video games have a grip on this generation? Or do you think that's just, do people like me, do we obsess too much over that?
They definitely have a grip on this generation.
They do, huh?
We journal in ELA, and I can't tell you how many kids, given the opportunity to have free rights, wrote about Fortnite. It is really a major influence in their lives. But I remember playing video games as a middle schooler, and I eventually grew out of playing them. And so maybe that's what's going to happen with this generation. I'm not sure.
Now, I'm looking at other data here. This 55% of teachers, this comes from the 2015-16 National Teacher and Principal Survey. 55% of teachers said that they are not satisfied with their teaching salary. You can. I will give you permission to dodge the question if you want, but I'll ask you. I'm not going to ask you what you're getting paid. I'm going to ask you if you're satisfied with what you're getting paid.
I'm satisfied with what I'm getting paid.
Okay. All right. Do you feel going into the future, if you're in this profession for decades, that there's enough room for growth in what you make that you're going to feel that it's fair?
I think there's definitely room for growth. I'm a first-year teacher, and it's only up from here. So... yeah.
When is she going to get really cynical and burned out?
Hopefully with the support of her colleagues and her kids and the passion she brings to it. Never, because not all of us do.
That was a very cynical question.
Sure.
But you know, she is this relentless ball of energy and positivity.
Right.
And frankly, this is the kind of person that I would love to teach my children every year. And I'm happy to say that there's a woman a lot like you who's teaching my son that I'm really proud of. But maintaining that's got to be a challenge, Stefan.
It is. And I can say, though, that it will be that the number of people who bring that kind of attitude that carries that Carrie just possesses and shoots out of every one of her pores, that kind of positive energy is very well represented in the district. Many more teachers than you would expect possess that quality, and that's what drives them. Not everyone, mm-hmm. and conditions are tough. Stability is not always present, especially in the first few years in the district for new teachers. There's some bumping around, some moving around, changes in personnel, changes in your supervisor, changes in your assignment, changes in your grade level. And it's very hard work. Not everyone who joins us realizes just how hard it is. And it's also potentially heartbreaking work. You've got to be ready to get your heart broken, let it heal, get it broken again, and sometimes the greatest rewards come when you realize you can still find the value in what you're doing, even though your heart's broken in 15 places. It's not for everyone. And the challenges of teaching in our district in particular are not for everyone. You do have to possess some degree of the positive energy that Carrie has, the sense of almost mission. I don't want to say missionary, but just a sense of the moral component of the work, a sense of the value of the work, and that pushes you past a lot of the obstacles. At the same time, as we try to get people like Carrie to join our profession's taken a real beating in media. It has become a football and politics in a way that I don't remember experiencing when I first started 20, 25 or more years ago. It's a different environment in terms of how we talk about education. We talk about our superhero teachers out of one side of our mouth, and we talk about how teachers must be held accountable for data-driven reforms out of the other side of our mouth. So some people arrive at our profession and they find that their values of what is most important about teaching are challenged by the emphases of our accountability-based school culture and the politics of education. So that's a challenge for some. And for others, they look for ways to keep renewing their interest. When I first started, the person I student taught with at East High School, he described to me that when he started teaching, he saw this guy down the hall, silver hair, had been teaching for 20 plus years, showed up, was the first one to turn on the coffee machine in the morning, greeted everyone with a nice hello, and he looked at that guy and he said, oh, I'll never be that guy 20 years down the road, 30 years but down the road still doing this. And there he was, and I was student taught with him, and here I am now. And one of the keys to that is finding the new things you can do to always be, consider yourself a lifelong learner, always building new skills, trying new things, whether you're taking on projects in your school or in your district or committees or different teacher leadership roles, which is part of what our career and teaching program provides. If you, it just so happens, Carrie's mentor, her lead teacher mentor that was assigned to her first year, was a former student of mine, who is now an experienced teacher and a mentor at School Without Walls. And she was Carrie's mentor this year. A lot of our teachers take those kinds of leadership roles, and then they take that passion, all that they've learned, and they get to pass it on to the next generation. And that re-energizes the mentor as well.
In a moment, we're going to hear Susan Spencer's story. We're talking to teachers who just completed their first year in the profession. Happily, both the teachers in the room are planning to stay. Both the first-year teachers are planning to stay, at least for now. And I'm not only going to focus on the negative aspects. I mean, if you read Vox.com, 7 Things I Wish I Knew About Teaching by a high school teacher named Andrew Simmons, he talked about how teaching had made him a better person, made him more open to the world and open to experience. And there's a lot of great stuff there. He also said teachers can act like teenagers, which was interesting when you spend a lot of time with teenagers. But I am also going to read a section of a piece that went a little viral by a former English teacher named Randy Turner for the Huffington Post, called A Warning to Young People, Don't Become a Teacher, on some of the reasons that Stefan just mentioned, some of the politics, some of the things, and we'll get our panel's reaction to that coming up. Listeners, if you want to weigh in with your thoughts on are you happy with what teachers are paid? Would you become a teacher? Would you urge your kids or friends to become teachers? Did you think about it? Did you change course? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. And, Carrie, I just want to ask you one more question. You know, I cannot imagine some of the heartbreak that Stefan describes, but I think I can try because, you know, right now the extent of the teaching I'm doing is coaching soccer to 7 and 8 year olds, right? So it's two nights a week. And man, it's late in our season, and I'm like living and dying with not to win or lose, but to see that they're growing and they're working together and that they're getting good experiences. And there are these moments where I'm just like, my whole heart is in it. And it's just soccer. You know, it's just summer soccer, right? What I can't really get my head around is spending months out of a year teaching a seventh grader and then finding out that there is some trauma or abuse or something happening that just makes it so hard for that young person to focus, to be the person that you think they can be. You know, you're scared of what their future holds for them. That's got to be some of what the heartbreak that Stefan refers to is, because, you know, you see the good in kids. Kids want to love each other and to learn and to grow. And so much of the pain that they sort of can inflict on others comes from trauma they feel themselves. How do you deal with that when you encounter that?
It can definitely be challenging, and some days you just can't help but to take it home. But I realized from growing up in the city of Rochester and my parents being community activists that there are very real challenges that people are dealing with, and these people have kids that they send to school every single day. And so a lot of what I saw growing up was, you know, my mom as a teacher would make home visits and we would go to maybe not some of the nicest neighborhoods. And, you know, there were stories that I would hear my mom talking about in terms of the quality of living that people, you know, had in their residences. And it wasn't always the best. And so I realized that this is very real for these kids, mm-hmm. and they're bringing this every day. It is difficult to digest because there's not a whole lot we can do outside of the classroom, but we can still make those home visits. And I did make, you know, a home visit this school year along with my colleagues. And so it gave me a really unique perspective into that student's life that I would not have had otherwise. And so I try to keep in mind that the students really, you know, are full-fledged people that have their own authentic concerns, and that we have to take that in consideration when we are teaching every single day. We're not just teaching, but we're parenting some days.
Well, Susan Spencer is an algebra and geometry teacher at Rochester Prep High School, just completed year one. What convinced you to do this?
Well, Evan, I think for me, I am a high school dropout who eventually ended up earning a PhD. With that PhD, I adjuncted at RIT for 3 years, teaching experimental physical chemistry. I'm happy to take questions from callers on that. what I found when I was teaching there was that there was a lack of women and minorities in the STEM curriculum. And it broke my heart as a woman in STEM. And I wanted to help in a way that was closer to the problem. So I started looking around for high school positions, and I applied at Rochester Prep, and it's been amazing ever since.
You go back about a year now when you're getting ready for that. What do you think surprised you or you learned the most in year one?
That's a really long list, but to make it short, I think I was surprised by how purpose-driven this work is for so many people. I've never worked in a profession where people were so dedicated to the same mission. And the level of support that I received has been amazing, with professional development, mentorship, coaching sessions. But, you know, I really got to hand it to my kids. I knew they were going to be great. I didn't know that they were going to change my life and change who I was as a human being.
Give me your best moment or something that really stands out to you.
I would say there's a silly one and a serious one. The silly one would be when Old Town Road first broke, and our whole class did Old Town Road together. And these are ninth graders. They take themselves fairly seriously sometimes, but this was a moment when, like, we just let loose, and it was fantastic. On the more serious side, I think one of my best academic moments was in a geometry class when one of my students, we were learning about circles, and she raised her hand and she said, "Wait, Dr. Spencer, is this why the circumference is equal to 2 pi r?" And I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, yes, this is it. Like, and it just rippled through the class, this kind of understanding, until like one of the very last kids stood up out of his seat and was like, oh my God, I get it now. And those moments of like deep academic passion from these kids just keeps me coming back every single day.
There's a moment at the beginning of any, either a unit or a new lesson, where you got to ask yourself, I mean, like, you know, these kids are capable, but you got to ask yourself, like, am I going to see that moment? Is this going to happen? Is it going to click? It has to be almost indescribable when you get that click, particularly if it's in a student who's had to work harder than maybe their peers at it.
I think the click is really important. And I think as teachers, one of our strongest assets is the ability to pivot and move and adjust what we're doing so that more and more and more kids have that click. I mean, I've started units. I started a unit on quadratic functions with what I thought was the way to start the unit. Lost about half the class.
I mean, how many ways with quadratic functions are there?
Oh, Evan, there's so many. Another show. But, you know, we reorient. We respond to the needs of our kids. We're not just driven by data. We're driven by what we see every single day in the classroom, so that we can get 100% of that classroom to college and beyond.
That takes some vulnerability and humility, because there's no teacher walks in with like an idea on how they're going to teach something and has to midstream go, well, it's my fault, not their fault. Like, this is really not working, and I'm going to change course. That takes some humility.
I think that it does, but it's also just informed behavior. It's teaching from the perspective of a scientist. If your hypothesis is not supported by data, you don't get mad at the data. You change your hypothesis and retest it. So for me, it's just more a natural way of doing things, I guess, because of my background. But yeah, you know, it can be hard. It can be embarrassing. It can be embarrassing if, you know, one of my coaches or my principal's in there watching me and I kind of have to course correct in the moment, but it's growth. And I know that my coaches are there to help me grow, so that I can help the kids grow.
All right, so let's get real. Again, don't have to name names, but give me a moment in your first year teaching that really rocked you or was really hard.
There's been a lot. I have one young lady who, she's listening, will know who this is, who lost a significant number of family members to a variety of things, and really struggled at school, it was heartbreaking. It's the type of thing that if one of my daughters was going through, I would be devastated and doing everything I can. So there were multiple moments like that, and you know, the silver lining is that the kids felt safe to come and problem solve with me, to try and figure this out. Like, what do I do? How do I cope with this? What does this even mean that this is happening? But it's very difficult. There are amazing young people, and you want everything to go so well for them that when the world knocks them down a little bit, sometimes you just don't know what to do.
Does our society judge kids too harshly without knowing what they've been through?
Yes, unequivocally. Yes, especially the way that society judges teenagers. if you've forgotten what it means to be a teenager, the amount of cognitive development that is happening at a really rapid pace, physical development, emotional development, hormonal changes, I'm not going to go into everything, but like they have so much going on just from a biochemical perspective. And then you put them into environments that if you've forgotten about or you've never even visited, you don't know what these environments are, then yes, you're going to be hypercritical of a kid who takes a couple tries to pass a Regents. But you don't know that the success that he starts with that day is that he got to school, period. He got there. And that was a huge success for him just because of what he had to walk through to get to the school.
You going to stay with this profession?
I've found my calling. I love it. And I've never had a better job in my life.
Wow. Now, where would you fall in these surveys that say teachers are underpaid or teachers are not paid fairly?
I'm going to offer a similarly artful answer to my two colleagues. I'm satisfied at my school because I know how it all works. I know the path forward. I know kind of how things evolve and change for teachers as you move from first year to something else. In terms of, you know, colleagues across the country, I think that it's, I don't even know that it's so much the fair pay as the fair treatment. You know, we're treated horribly in the media sometimes. And I look at, for an example, how teachers are treated in Japan. And I'm not saying that we need to go to that point, but to have more respect for the profession and the impact that the profession has socially, politically, I think would go a long way towards teachers who aren't being paid fairly yet. It would go towards pushing that fair pay to happen.
We're talking with teachers after year one in a time in this country where we've seen a significant drop in students who are pursuing higher ed who want to be teachers. In the mid-1970s, 22% of higher ed students in this country were essentially on the path to become teachers. Now it's less than 10%. And after our only break of the hour, we'll get your feedback. Linda, Calvin, we'll get more. As I mentioned, I'll read a little bit of this essay by a retired or a former English teacher who is advising people not to go into the profession to see what our guests think about that. You just heard Susan Spencer, an algebra and geometry teacher at Rochester Prep. Carrie McCree, an English language arts teacher at Anna Murray Douglas School No. 12 in Rochester. Stephen Cohen, director of the Career in Teaching Program at the Rochester City School District. Your feedback is next. Coming up in our second hour, a decrease in opioid overdose deaths in Monroe County in 2018. Why? What's working? Certainly, it's not enough to declare any kind of victory in the crisis, but at least there is some positive news in terms of the trend lines. A couple of the presidential contenders have their own plans for dealing with opioids and pain management. We'll get specific about that. Join the conversation next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to some of your phone calls. Linda in Webster is first. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I just want to speak to the issue of teacher salaries. And I think what people fail to realize is that when people say, oh, you have the summers off and teachers get paid so much, people don't realize that at least in New York State, because I am a teacher, we have to get a master's within 5 years. So that means going to graduate school and taking out loans in order to get that master's if we want to consider teaching. And I was just doing some ad hoc research with salary.com. And you have a software engineer at $86,000. This is Rochester. Mechanical engineer, ballpark, $82,000. Accountant, $62,000. Game designer, $62,000. And these are all with bachelor's degrees. And a public school teacher in Rochester with a master's degree gets paid on average $56,588. So I just want the public who's listening to please take that into account. And that's not to say anything against any of the other professions. We need to do all kinds of things. But I think we need to be comparing apples to apples instead of apples to oranges.
Linda, thank you. Stefan, is that fair?
Yeah, that That's fair. One of the big obstacles that people trying to enter the profession run into is the cost of getting certified in New York State. And Susan will be able to speak more personally to her route into the profession. And part of that, for a lot of our younger professionals, is the cost. In the Rochester City School District, if you get a job with us with your initial certificate, your master's degree will, at the SUNY rate, be reimbursed. Tuition can be reimbursed towards your professional certification. So that's a fairly very generous and I'm not sure how common benefit that our negotiated contract offers new teachers in our district. But even to get to that initial certificate, the tests, the certification exams, the coursework, not everyone knows coming right out of undergraduate that teaching is what they want to do. I was a history major, I didn't major in education. I had to go back and pick up some courses, a long time ago. So these are financial obstacles to getting into the profession. At the same time, you don't want people coming into the profession who are not qualified. So that balance of minimum qualifications so we get quality candidates and not making those obstacles so much that it prevents great people from entering the profession, that's not always an easy needle to thread.
Yeah, so let me read Heidi's email, and then I'll kick it over to Susan to kind of talk about your experience getting into teaching. Heidi writes to say, Evan, thanks for talking about this. I'm a former nonprofit professional turned stay-at-home parent. I'd like to go into teaching in the next few years, but I'm unsure of the path to do that. My appetite for going back to school is low. I know there are programs for former professionals, but I can't find much information. Can your guests address this? That's from Heidi. Susan?
Yeah, so I can, speak for what goes on at my school and all the Rochester prep schools in the area. But to really kind of agree here, I see my colleagues working a 9 to 12 hour day, depending on sports that they coach or after school clubs that they run. And then they're going home and they're doing their coursework until 9 or 10 at night and showing up the very next day to continue forward. So it is a huge demand on not just our finances, but also our time. And it can be a lot for new teachers. So I'm working towards certification and an education degree because I, all of my degrees are in science. I've got 3 of them, but none of them are education. And for me, one of the things I like about my school is that process can happen over a kind of longer period of time. So I'm able to space it out a little bit more while still being able to teach. But it's not easy. And I'll be honest with you, with a PhD, I didn't think I would need to do a lot, but I do. I need to do exactly as much as someone who has a bachelor's. So, it's really interesting to me as someone who's gone through the education system quite a bit. And I empathize with our caller not being super interested in returning to school. I would say she should explore the different schools that are out there and, talk to them one-on-one and see what kind of program they would be supporting for her if she joined them at that school.
Okay. Independent schools or prep schools are a quicker path into the profession? Yes or no?
I don't know that they are quicker.
Okay.
No, because we have many of my colleagues have done 4, 5, 8 years in education in order to get there. So I would argue that it's not necessarily quicker, but there's a little bit more liberty in the first year or so with regards to certification. So I would not say it's quicker. I'd say it's the same as my colleagues anywhere else.
Barry writes to say, as a former or a retired RCSD teacher, teaching is an act of faith. You create lessons and you present materials and attitudes that are meant to allow students to acquire ways to deal with a variety of inputs, written, oral, graphic, observations. Students get to use them to understand their world better and act on their developing values. As a teacher, you do what you do to create as many paths for students as possible. You strive to show students their options with no guarantee they will use them and benefit from them. Teaching is an act of faith. You agree with that, Carrie?
I definitely agree with that.
Stefan?
Yeah, sometimes you find out that your faith was rewarded in very unexpected, sometimes just glorious ways. But yeah, you never know.
What do you think, Susan?
I would agree. I think that faith is sometimes completely fulfilled for you. You know, I remember our 2019 commencement when 100% of our kids had gotten accepted into college, except for one who went to the U.S. military. And it's those moments like that, those whole school moments where everyone is coming together to celebrate, that not just restores teachers' faith in the process, but the students' faith in the teachers and the students' faith in the education system. There's so much joy to be celebrated.
Rick says, Evan, as I listen to your guests and their experience as first-year teachers, I am reminded of a quote from Frederick Douglass, cited in a text I am reading now. My dear young friends, accept the inspiration of hope. Imitate the example of the brave mariner who, amid clouds and darkness, amid hail, rain, and storm bolts, battles his way against all that the sea opposes to his progress, and you will reach the goal of your noble ambition in safety. End quote. Please tell the teachers I thank them for their commitment to their students' learning despite the challenges. Their commitment is an inspiration for hope to their students. So that's from Rick. Really nice validation there.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Next on the phone is Calvin. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hi, Evan. Hi, panel. And I came to the show a little late, so you might have talked about this. But so I have a comment and a question for everyone who's on the panel. My pathway to teaching was alternative. You've talked about that a little bit. And one of the things that I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for some time and did what was called at the time the New Teacher Project. And for me, the program grossly underprepared me for the emotional and mental toll that especially being a new teacher takes on first-year teachers. Students, even now I'm working with, who experience homelessness, other traumas that severely impact how they're able to learn and receive instruction. And for me, it ended up many years ago to where I actually literally had a nervous breakdown within that first year. And so I think one of the things I'm wanting to hear from you all is, because you have this platform, to talk about ways that you're able to self-care and take care of yourself, especially being a first-year teacher. I don't think that the current education system that prepares teachers, whether it's traditional or alternative, really gives enough time about like how to take care of yourself and not to take all of the challenges and emotions home with you. I can remember spending whole weekends drafting plans, rewriting plans for students, behavior plans, et cetera. And there's so much that goes into preparation that's not just the classroom instruction that people, I think, non-teachers don't realize that. And so I'm all about talking about self-care and taking care of yourself, but especially how do you do that, or how have you done that without distancing yourself so much from the students? Because that emotion is needed to connect with students, especially students who are in high needs district like RCSD, so that you don't become a robot, but also so that you're not like having a nervous breakdown like I did and almost leaving the whole profession.
Calvin, thank you for that. And Carrie, I'll start with you. I mean, it is not, I'm sure it's not uncommon for teachers to feel torched at times when you're investing that kind of emotional energy like Calvin's talking about. What do you do?
So for me, having a really strong team, my mentor, Mariana, was there, my administrator, my colleagues, I never felt that I was unable to ask anyone a question that would be, you know, unwelcome. And so having people around me that were available, whether 7 days a week, any time of day, was instrumental in being able to maintain myself and, you know, practice positive self-care. That includes my family as my support system as well. The program, the career and teaching program that RCSD offers, is incredibly valuable for first-year teachers because my mentor was just amazing. And that was one of my biggest fears going into teaching as a whole. My professors warned me, they gave me fair warning, that everything that I learned in terms of like theoretical framework would go out of the window my first year. And they were absolutely right. So I knew going into it that I would face some emotional challenges as a result of the advice they were given. But for me, that having a strong support system and having a strong team was the difference between being able to make a difference in the kids' lives and being able to survive.
And I suspect having a mentor, someone there to lean on, someone you can open up to is big.
It is. And Rochester offers a fairly unique, intensive mentoring program that involves, well, how often did Mariana, did you guys text and call? And
all of the time.
All the time. But weekly contacts, whenever possible, even weekly visits to watch with students, written reports, written feedback, and our mentors make a recommendation for continuation alongside the supervisors at the end of the year. It's an intensive program. Without it, I don't know what we would do. And I just wanted to share that we had we've collected program evaluation information at the end of the year from our new teachers, and 271 teachers answered a question about whether you considered resigning at some point during the school year, and 24% said they gave serious consideration to quitting over the course of the year. Of the 271 new folks
How
that
many?
Answered, 24% of the 271 that answered that question on our program survey said they had considered resigning. Six of those, 8.5%, actually did resign. And of those that did not, 62% said that the mentor was one of the major influences that kept them going. Sometimes it's the shoulder to cry on. Sometimes it's the perspective. I'm going to throw you under the bus, Carrie, but I witnessed Mariana working with Carrie, and one of her thrusts was just kind of taking it easy on herself. Carrie, don't be so hard on yourself. That was a great lesson, just because this one didn't work the way you wanted. Sometimes that kind of perspective. I can remember my mentor told me I had to go home one day a week without schoolwork, like just one weekday a week, because I was staying up till whatever hour trying to get caught up on stuff. Just pick one night, make Wednesday night sacred. That really, otherwise I'd burn out. Mm-hmm. He kind of told me point blank, you're going to burn out. Mm-hmm. So having someone who's supportive, who understands, empathizes with what drives your, you know, the emotional difficulties that you're in, and who has the perspective of some experience to know some ways to, simple ways sometimes, to take care of yourself, and sometimes less simple ways. And sometimes our mentors have to bring our teachers to medical resources, to mental health resources, which our district provides, in order to get them through those rough spots.
Susan Spencer?
I would agree, and I appreciate Kelvin bringing up self-care. It's an integral part of this profession because, as my grandmother always said, if you don't fill your cup up, you cannot pour it out for others. So to me, that constant effort of restoration is really, really critical. I would also agree with what Carrie said. Having a robust mentorship and leadership in place is absolutely critical, and Rochester Prep has been amazing. I mean, we do professional development 3 hours a week. It's built into the school day, so we don't have to do anything different. We have an open door policy, so I will always have other people coming in and observing me, and they will always give me feedback. Mm. So it's just amazing when you do have that support, and I could not imagine doing it without it.
All right, we're getting tight here, so let me just read, and I'm going to let our guests rebut this to close the program. Because a lot of people have shared Randy Turner, former English teacher, writing for the Huffington Post, a warning to young people, don't become a teacher. He writes, "Nothing I have ever done has brought me as much joy as I have received from teaching children for the past 14 years. Helping young writers grow and mature has been richly rewarding, and I would not trade my experience for anything. That being said, if I were 18 years old now and deciding how I wanted to spend my adult years, the last thing I would want to become is a classroom teacher. Classroom teachers, especially those just out of college, are more stressed and less valued than at any previous time in our history. They have to listen to a long list of politicians who belittle their ability, blame them for every student whose grades do not reach arbitrary standards, and want to take away every fringe benefit they have, everything from the possibility of achieving tenure to receiving a decent pension. After all, what other profession would allow me to make $37,000 a year after 14 years of experience and then have people tell me how greedy I am?" That is Randy Turner saying, don't do it. 30 seconds apiece. Here's Susan Spencer's rebuttal.
I empathize with Randy's feelings on the subject. However, the external perception and treatment of us does not change the internal importance of our work with kids. So our work with kids as teachers must go on. We must educate our young people. We must bring them up. This is the generation that's going to save us, right? So while I understand that, yeah, it's hard, and if you listen to the outside stuff, it's challenging, it doesn't impact the importance of the work and the fact that we need as many people from as many backgrounds doing that work.
Carrie.
This is selfless work. It is hard work. There are challenges and obstacles, but it is incredibly rewarding. And I think as a member of the Rochester community, this is our future. Someone has to teach the kids. And it's important that, you know, we take the reins on that to lead them forward.
Stefan.
Teachers have to see themselves as leaders in their classrooms, as leaders in their schools, as leaders in their community, and empower them to advocate for what their kids need, for what the profession needs, to make it a better profession so we can do our great work, which is what we want to do for all our kids.
Carrie, Susan, this was a one-year mark conversation. You're invited 5 years from today to come back and tell us if you still feel the same way. Will you do it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love Susan saying this is the generation that's going to save us. She's not saying save the planet. We often hear that with climate, for example. Planet's going to be here. Are we? And it's a very interesting point that Susan says this is a generation that's going to save us. And I think they will too. Susan Spencer and Carrie McCree, Rochester's lucky to have you teaching. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And Stefan, you too, and certainly with the mentoring and the entire work that the program and the career and teaching program does at RCSD, really appreciate what you do, and thank you for being here.
I really enjoy being here. Thanks, Evan.
Short break, more connections coming up.